special broadcast tonight. We're going to do a examination and analysis of white-black relationships in the USA. And very important, obviously, this is a worsening situation, and it doesn't have to be, but there's very little common sense, a lot of exploitation, and a lot of lying to try to get African-Americans and white Americans divided. And it's working. The progressives are making it happen. So I want to give you the stark truth tonight. But first, did you see the Biden Stephanopoulos interview this morning on ABC? So as I told you, George Stephanopoulos is not a journalist, and he's not even close to being a journalist, but he is ABC's, I guess, senior correspondent. Is that what they call him? And it's not that he's is there anything wrong with Stephanopoulos? I don't really like him personally, but he shouldn't be there. And now he's Biden's go-to guy. So you remember Barack Obama's go-to guy was Steve Croft of 60 Minutes. Remember that? When Donald Trump was running for president, his go-to guy was me. And those are some of the best interviews I think you'll ever see that Donald Trump gave. We're going to try to replicate those in the history tour. And now Biden's go-to guy is George Stephanopoulos because he knows that Stephanopoulos will ask him, he has to ask him certain questions, but he'll never follow up. And if Biden falters, Stephanopoulos isn't going to nail him. So today, what struck me about this interview was that Biden is absolutely telling the world he didn't do anything wrong. His administration didn't do anything wrong. Everything worked out pretty much the way they planned it. And you look at it and you go, are you blanking kidding me? This is one of the biggest debacles in U.S. foreign policy history. And people will never forget this. This is going to have unintended consequences for years. And not to even mention the American service people who killed and maimed and sacrificed unbelievable things to fight in Afghanistan and $1 trillion plus that was spent. But to Biden, no. This was a plan all the way. And yeah, if you hadn't do anything, no, don't worry about it. And I told you yesterday that if Biden lied, if that's a provable lie, it's going to be hard because it's classified information. But if he was told by the CIA or any of the other intel agencies that this is going to happen, if you pull out all U.S. personnel, you're going to have a collapse on your hand and you're going to have people, you know, falling off planes or anything. If he were told that and then went on in July and said, it's not going to happen, that's impeachable. Very hard to prove it. Certainly the Democratic Congress never going to investigate it. The Justice Department under the control of Biden never going to do it. But if the Republicans win next year, they could do it. So keep that in mind. But for Biden to sit there and go, nah, I didn't do anything wrong, tells you really all you need to know about Joe Biden. Okay, so let's get into this race business. And I'm going to start with the facts of the matter, because facts matter here. Don't matter to most of the other news organizations, but here they really matter. Because my analysis is based on this. There are 46,800,000 African Americans in the USA right now, 14% of the population. The median household income, which is very important, for blacks is $46,000. For whites, it's $76,000. So there is a big income gap. All right? There's no doubt about that. There it is in stone. But black income is rising faster than white income from 2015 to 2019. Okay? So blacks' income increased 15%, whites 12%, which shows that our society is not becoming more racist. It is becoming more, and I hate to use this word, inclusive. Okay. Again, these are facts. The next fact is education, and this is everything. So college kids got to take a test, the SATs. Most of us took it. And in math, the national score on the SAT was 523 out of 800. Black scored 454. White scored 547. If you go into reading and writing, which is vital in this society, okay, blacks are at 44% of college readiness, whites 79%. And finally, math, blacks are only 21% ready for college math, whites 59%. Now, all of these stats are according to the Brookings Institute. This is the key to everything, okay? Now, when you see that the teachers' unions, the progressive left liberal teachers' unions, absolutely sold out African-Americans in high school, you should get mad. But no one will report it. The unions will never, ever stop their horrible teaching methods. Because if you're that far behind, you need remedial work. You just don't throw them into the class when they can't compete. Whether it doesn't matter what color you are. As a high school teacher, I know what I'm talking about. Now, why are the kids in school not performing as well? Well, here's the big reason right here. 70% of African Americans are born out of wedlock. You see a 69% stat there, but that's up to 70% plus in the last 3 years, okay? 30% of whites are born out of wedlock. A 40% gap. That's why the kids in the African-American precincts aren't learning. Because there isn't a father there. Drives me crazy. Okay. Now, 20 years ago, 2001, Gallup asked Americans, are black-white relations good or bad? Net good, 63% in 2001, net bad, 35%. That's the same question in 2021. Net good, 42%, net bad, 57%. Look how it has changed in 20 years. Now, why has it changed? That's what we're going to hone in on. Why has it changed? Well, it's changed because of the internet. Because George Floyd and these terrible things that have happened between police and African Americans are now worldwide. People see them, all right? And they get emotional. And, you know, I don't want to hide anything. So I'm not going to say that that is a bad thing, but it's certainly a contributor to the angst between blacks and whites. And then you have the racial provocateurs on TV all day long. Roll it.
It is obvious that we have a long way to go in this country if we have lawmakers who are refusing to acknowledge the fact that there is, institutionalized racism that is embedded within our systems that we need to actively work in rooting out.
It is very clear that this country is still struggling with racism. We still have racism showing up in almost every institution.
Okay, so this is the blacks hear this every single day, and they process. Now, Mark Lamont Hill, you may remember him. He was on The Factor a bunch of times, a very fiery left-wing progressive African-American. He's got a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania, so Hill's a smart guy. He knows the world, and he is taking a very devoted left-wing position. I like debating with Hill because it's a good back and forth, and I talked to him yesterday. So I just set you up with a poll, Gallup poll, that shows a tremendous deterioration in black-white American race relations in 20 years. Why do you think that's happened?
There are a lot of reasons why people over the last 20 years have lost faith in American racial possibilities and racial progress. One is they've seen through the use of cell phones, through the use of social media, they've seen so many black people killed. They've seen so many people killed by law enforcement. They've seen so many protests and so many marches without any real sense that things have gotten better. They have they lived in the Obama era, which for many people was the promise of a post-racial America, the promise that the world would get better. And from 2008 until 2016, there was some progress on some fronts, but on the racial front, we would say no. There's a lot more honest and raw conversation about race taking place, and I think it's created a sense of possibility on the one hand, but in many ways it's made people say, hey, this isn't going well for us. I don't believe that race is a solvable problem in America.
All right. I think your point about seeing on video police brutality against African Americans does exacerbate race relations. I don't think Obama had anything to do with it. He did the best he could, I thought, to try to improve race relations. He wasn't a bomb thrower, provocateur. But you have, in the African-American community, made tremendous economic strides in 20 years. Much better off in 2021 than the African-American crew was in 2001. And if you look at the police brutality stats, and I'm sure you have, they're not saying that there's a tremendous amount of police brutality directed at African-Americans. But the hype of it all, when a George Floyd goes down, that, I think, is the driver of the division. Am I wrong?
Well, first, let me say, it's always a good day for me when I'm criticizing Obama and you're defending him. That just, it does my heart well. You're really growing over the years. You're getting warmer and fuzzier here for me.
I know. Yeah.
but I think that there is, I do think there's something to be said about the police brutality stats. You know, all the data shows that while Black and white people, according to a lot of the studies, are equally likely to be killed by the police, or really equally unlikely to be killed by the police, when we look at the level of physicality, the level of brutality in interactions, Black people are on the high end of it. Now, you could go your whole life without being roughed up by a cop. Most Black people will. But most Black people will also tell you that they've had a bad experience. They've had that they have a fear, and that fear gets amplified by social media, no doubt. But I don't want to frame it as like much ado about nothing, or that this is some creation of new media.
No, but here's a much more intense fear on the part of African Americans, and that's getting murdered by another African American. The stats are unbelievable. So according to the FBI, 89%. Of Black murder victims were killed by other Blacks. And African Americans account for 44% of all murder victims in the USA, okay? And they're only 14% of the population. So I would put forth that yes, many Blacks have a fear of the police, and maybe most of them have had a bad experience with the police. I'll absolutely admit that. But the big fear is get murdered by another African-American, is it not?
It is not. I can tell you, as I've been Black a really long time, that is not my biggest fear. Now,
maybe not you, but somebody living in a poor neighborhood that's rife with crime, drug gangs running wild, you don't think they're afraid of getting hurt by those people?
Of course people are. And I still live in a poor neighborhood. You know, I stay with the community, but I think that there's a very real stat that you're pointing out. There's a gap between, maybe what you should say is that maybe Black people should be more afraid of the kind of internecine crime you're talking about. But when you ask Black people what they're afraid of, they're not afraid of other Black people. Now, are Black people cautious and smart and wise navigating the streets? Of course, we all should be. But I think that the fear of police is a different one, and I'll tell you why. Oh, actually, let me back up and tell you one other thing. You're right, 89% of Black people are killed by other Black people, but that's a proximity crime. Most white people are killed by other white people. Now your stat about the proportion, 40% to the 13, I think is a different thing. But I don't want to frame Black people being killed by Black people as some unique pathology of Black people, but rather Asian groups, white groups, they all kill each other at about
the same rate. But not at that rate. The proportion of murders committed by African Americans is far beyond any other group in America. Far beyond.
That's a different issue. I conceded the point that Black people are overrepresented in terms of being murder victims. I conceded that point. But what I'm saying is the fact that most Black people are killed by other Black people, I'm saying, is in line with white people. Most a person, the person most likely to kill me is a Black person. The person most likely to kill you, other than maybe somebody at MSNBC, is another white person. Which
okay. But the fact remains that 14% of the population is responsible for 44% of the homicides. That's way out of whack.
The reason why race relations are fraying, and the reason why black people are losing faith in the possibility of racial justice in America, is not because of quote unquote black on black crime. It's because of the type of injustices that we see from white people and from white law enforcement in particular, among other issues. And this is a very important point, Bill. When a gang shoots me, if a gang member shoots me, I had no good faith belief that the Crips or the Bloods or the gangster disciples were supposed to protect me. But also, when a black person shoots me, I have every reason to believe they're going to be arrested, they're going to be charged, they're going to be convicted, and they're going to get a long sentence.
Not in Chicago. Those stats are now crumbling. All right, let's get on to...
But I need you to hear this point out. Hear this point out, Bill. Just right. Talk fast. My point is that when the police shoot me, it frays the social contract. When I don't get justice from a police officer, it makes me lose trust in the system. My faith in the system doesn't hinge on gang members treating me good. It hinges on the people paid to protect and serve me.
The people in power to give you a fair shot is a fair point, okay? It's a fair point. But I'm trying to get to the root of the division that is widening between whites and blacks. And part of the reason is the horrific level of violence in the African-American community, which I believe, this is our last topic for you, stems from the dissolution of the family. So again, the stats are horrific, with more than 70% of babies, African-American babies, born out of wedlock. And for the whites, it's half that. And so you have almost chaos in the social fabric in many African-American neighborhoods because there's no dad. And you're a dad. You know how important being a dad is. There's no dad. And that isn't being addressed in any high-profile way by whites or blacks in America, as far as I can see.
I would say the exact opposite. I can't look at a conservative conversation and not hear about absentee fathers and the broken black family.
Because that's where it begins. The education.
So there's two things there. The first thing for me is that I'm always fascinated at how the right loves colorblind policy. They love to not talk about race unless they're talking about dysfunctional black neighborhoods. Then race becomes the most important thing to name. So it's an interesting conversation to have. That said,
but that's not me. You've been talking to me for more than a decade. That's not me.
Yeah, but I'm
willing to talk about any aspect of the race situation. I wanted to get better.
Right. And in the same way that when we're talking about black people's fear, we're not talking about me. We're talking about the broader world who aren't as wise as you or I, Bill. But the idea here is, one, the source of black fatherlessness, as we talk about it, is not, again, we have to talk about those sources. It's easy to say black fathers aren't in the house. But many black fathers who aren't in the house or near the house aren't there because of joblessness. They're not there because of mass incarceration over the last 50 years. There are reasons structurally that pull people away that aren't about individual choice. But the other thing we have to think about is, just because people aren't married doesn't mean that they're not active and involved. Black non-custodial fathers are actually the most involved. So even when black people aren't married, they might not live in the house, but they still come to the house. They still parent their children. But again, if we're going to look at the genesis of the problem, I want to look at those neighborhoods where black men got 40 years for drug penalties, where other people got 5 or 6. And then we say, look, there are no, as we call them, OGs in the neighborhood to help people resolve disputes. So when you see young people killing each other, part of it is because the men in the neighborhood have been taken away. When people say they're fatherless, part of it is irresponsibility. I wouldn't doubt that. But a lot of it is structural. So we have to, if we're going to fix this, we got to go to the source of the problem.
Some of it is structural. But when you have a 70% out of wedlock birth rate, and I'll make one last point and give you the last word. In the 1960s, there was a low fatherless rate in the United States. And the criminal justice system was worse then toward African-Americans than it is now. But the family unit in African-American areas was more intact. The tradition was, we stay together. And the crime rate for African-Americans in the 60s was much, much lower Then it exploded in the 80s and 90s with crack. And a lot of the people you don't want sent away for a long time destroyed thousands of lives. Thousands of lives. And you know that. Because some of your friends, just like some of my friends, succumbed to the narcotics. But anyway, when the family unit was intact for African Americans, all right, their crime rate was much, much lower. Last word.
First, let's not romanticize the past. Part of the reason Black people hung together and stuck together and stayed in the same neighborhoods and stayed in the same houses was because we couldn't live anywhere else. We weren't allowed to do anything else. And Jim Crow was a big factor in that. And then you raised an interesting point from the crime rise in the 1960s until now. Bill, the rise in crime is because of the rise in criminalization. When you look at from Nixon forward, the war on drugs begins when? In the 1960s. So of course, crime goes up. More things became a crime. If I take the law book and I thicken it and say, you can get in trouble for more stuff, and drugs, as you pointed out, infiltrate the neighborhoods, then yes, more people will get caught for stuff. Yes, more people will go to prison, but it's not because we lost our moral compass. It's because there was a very concerted effort and focus on taking Black people and criminalizing them, and taking poor white people and criminalizing them.
There were an awful lot of...
The difference is my friends that got locked up are still away, and your friends who got locked up were able to come home.
I don't have any friends who got locked up. I mean, I got to tell you, we'll talk about this some other time, but in my neighborhood, Levittown, if you were a dope dealer, you were the lowest scum of the earth. Everybody just, it was disgusting. Now it's different. So the peer pressure in my neighborhood was send those guys away. Mark Lamont Hill, very smart, honest guy. I've known him forever. And if Hill and O'Reilly can have a civil conversation about race, anybody can. Is that true?
That is 100% true.
Everything is expensive these days, you know that. The government is printing trillions of dollars in consumer prices higher than ever. If the government continues its printing and spending, the dollar could continue its free fall and lose its coveted role as the world reserve currency. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But there are a few things you can do right now. American Hartford Gold can show you how to protect your money, your retirement, your hard-earned savings against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. Start with a short phone call, and they can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or put inside your 401k or IRA. So please call or text them right now. Tell them Bill O'Reilly sent you. Call 877-444-GOLD, 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. Again, that's 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. All right, so Hill firmly believes that, police go out and look for Black people to arrest and put them in jail and all that. There's some of that. There are racist cops, all right? There are. But they're a very small percentage of the 88,000 law enforcement. Look, when you have a murder rate, 44% of all the murders in USA are committed by African Americans. They're 14% of the population. They commit 44% of the murders. And 89% of the people killed are African Americans. They're killing their own. And when you have that, you're going to have more people arrested for violent crimes. Narcotics sold on the streets. And I'm not going to say primarily because there are a lot of people involved in the narcotics business. But in certain neighborhoods, all Black and it's all Hispanic. And there are a few neighborhoods, not many, where it's white. Now, if you're going to sell narcotics on the street, you're going to get popped. Okay, you're going to get popped. And with the crack stuff that destroyed millions of lives, yeah, they put him in jail for a long time, selling his poison. But was it aimed at trying to destroy the fabric of African-American society? No, it was not. It was actually aimed at protecting African-Americans from crack dealers and heroin dealers. But Mark Lamont Hill will never, ever in a million years see that. That's a obvious source of disagreement. Okay, so the second guest tonight is a woman named Crystal Knight. She's a former political director for Priorities USA, the largest Democratic presidential super PAC. She has a master's degree from the University College of London, very, very fine school, and a degree in journalism from Howard University. I also talked to her yesterday. So, Ms. Knight, I'm going to start with you the way I started with Mark Lamont Hill, citing a Gallup poll of 20 years ago in 2001 that showed the majority of Americans felt that race relations between blacks and whites were good. But 20 years later, the majority feel they're bad. Why the shift? What happened?
Well, I think there are a number of things that have happened over the last 20 years. One, there was the first African-American president who took, you know, that was elected in this country, Barack Obama. And what we saw, particularly with his election, race relations really took a turn for the worse. There was a lot of, you know, undergirded, you know, microaggressions in the Senate. There were a lot of microaggressions in Congress. And we saw a lot of people reacting negatively to having the first African-American president in this country.
Then why was he reelected, though? Why was he reelected by more of a plurality the second time than the first time? If what you're saying is that, all right, Barack Obama got to be president, and then some people didn't like that, but when he ran again, he was reelected.
Well, the good thing about, you know, elections in this country is that the majority wins, right? And so there was an overwhelming majority of Americans who still thought and believed in his presidency based upon some of the policies that he was able to accomplish, particularly ACA in his first term. And so it's not surprising that he got reelected because he was a good president. But what is surprising is how race relations took a turn and how the relationship between African-Americans specifically and police, they began to deteriorate under his presidency. And even in the years, you know, the future years that preceded his term. And so we have to look at all of those things. I think even most recent with the George Floyd incident that happened last summer and all of the protests that have been happening, those things have not helped race relations in this country by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure. But I think at this point, that because of George Floyd in particular and others that have been captured on video and then sent out over the internet, that's the big component that's different now than 2001, is that a lot of the police brutality has been captured and sent out. And people react emotionally to that. African-Americans react emotionally to it. And I think that has caused race relations to deteriorate in some degree.
Right, but even though police are being caught on camera, the bad actors are still, you know, taking place. And so on one hand, you're saying, yes, body cameras have helped improve, you know, reprimanding police officers. But at the same time, you still have police officers who are literally out here punching citizens. Right here in the District of Columbia last week, a man was arrested and he was literally punched in the face by a police officer while two other police officers held him. And so, again, if you know that you're being filmed, if you know that you're wearing a body camera and you know that citizens now have smartphones, why do you continue to act?
Well, they're
going to
lose their jobs. You know they'll pay a price for
maybe
that. No, that's not a maybe. They will. But the point is there are 88,000 law enforcement officers in the United States of America. Among those 88,000, a substantial minority of black officers and Hispanic officers. I don't believe there's a mass mindset to abuse African Americans. I don't believe that. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I think the data backs me up. However, everyone knows there are bad police officers. There are brutal police officers. There are bigots who don't like blacks. Everybody knows that. But now in our society, if they are uncovered, they're gone. They're not protected any longer. Would you see that point?
I would not see that point.
Really?
Because when I think about Eric Garner in New York and how he was choked to death, that police officer did not lose his job. When I think about Tamir Rice in Ohio, who was shot because he had a toy gun, that police officer was removed from the force, but he was able to move to another state and get another job on a police force. And so, you know, there are instances after instances, just like those two, where police act improperly, they act incorrect, and they're either temporarily reprimanded, they're able to retire, and, you know, and still have their pension, they're able to go on and live another life. Whereas a person of color, a Black person, they're not afforded that same opportunity and that ability.
And do you think this is endemic in our society? I mean, you think this is everywhere?
I think that there is a problem with policing in this country. I believe that there needs to be a federal overhaul of the way that police conduct themselves with people of color in this country. And there needs to be a national registry that would, you know, let other police districts know when a police officer has had a major or a serious incident so that he or she is not able to simply retire or leave or resign.
Look, I'm not going to get into that, but I am going to get into, if you are attacking the police, not you yourself, but any group or person, then the likelihood of African Americans being harmed rises. And I know you know the stat. I mean, it's an incredible stat that 89% of all African-American homicide victims, people murdered, are murdered by other African-Americans. And if you don't have a strong police force, that number is going to rise. So I talked to Hill about this. I said, okay, you don't like the police, you fear the police, but shouldn't you fear the African-American killers more? You see what's happening in Chicago and D.C. and Philly and New York, where Black drug gangs are running wild. They're murdering people all over the place. And the police themselves are receding from it. They're not reacting as strongly as they once did. So by demonizing the police, aren't you putting African Americans in more danger?
Well, listen, Bill, I think that you make a great point. Black on Black crime is a problem in this country. It's a problem in a lot of the urban centers of this country and major cities. What I'm saying, I'm not, you know, demonizing police. I believe that police are needed in our society. What I'm saying is that we have to also fund other programs. We have to fund community violence intervention programs. We have to fund mental health issue programs. We have to fund job training programs. We have to fund things that are deterrents to crime.
Would you be willing to go out and, in addition to that, and I don't object to any of that, fund a massive family values campaign? So that the 70% of African-American babies born out of wedlock might drop down to 50%. Because as you know, young boys without a father, they are the first recruits of gang members. Would you be willing to do that?
I would be willing to fund anything that would be supportive of communities of color and would allow communities of color to have the same access to equity that suburban communities have across this country. And so I reject the statistic that, you know, because a child is born out of wedlock, that he or she does not have the same opportunity of success in this country. That just shouldn't be. And so that's a systemic problem that our country needs to work on and fix through legislation.
But it's much higher in the African-American precincts. And I think that if family were emphasized there, you would see more benefits go to younger African Americans. Last question. You're a very successful woman, very articulate woman. Do you think that America is noble? Has America been fair to you?
I think that America is always striving to be a better country than the way that it was founded. I have to always go back to 1776 when this country was founded. It was founded with white wealthy men in mind. So it was not founded with people of color in mind, and it certainly wasn't founded with women in mind. Have I enjoyed some of the success and the pearls of being an American citizen? Absolutely. But do I know that my country, I can push my country and advocate for my country to be a better America? Absolutely.
No, we all want improvements. So I think, but you know, yes. And I'm going to send you my book, Killing England. There's a reason why it was all white rich guys making the Constitution.
And why is that?
Well, it's a long story, but it's basically they were the only ones that had the resources to go to Philadelphia.
But they literally pillaged other countries for resources. I mean, how can you say that?
At that time, they were just hanging on and hoping they weren't going to be hung by the king.
Well, you know, we're gonna agree to disagree on that point.
Well, read my book first, because it's a fact-based book, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it because it's not a political book. It's just a history book. But there is a reason why that happened. But as you say, and I agree with you 100%, we're trying here to bring everybody together and everybody gets an equal shot at the pursuit of happiness. That's what it's all about. So I really appreciate it, Ms. Knight. Thank you for coming on. And if we can ever do you a favor of any kind, let us know, okay?
Thank you for having me. Enjoyed the conversation.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so let me set the record straight on this, because this is important. Ms. Knight and all of the critical race theory zealots believe that America was founded on racism, that we're a horrible country, that we need reparations, and this divides blacks and whites. Here is the truth, okay? I wrote a book, Killing England, like I mentioned. Please read the book. Please give it to any African-American that you're friendly with. When the American Revolution began, the founding fathers knew they could never defeat the King of England and his huge army and navy without all of the colonies coming together. They couldn't just do it with New England or New York or Philadelphia. They needed everybody from Georgia way on up to the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which extended into Maine. They had to get everybody involved in order to win the Revolutionary War. The South's economy was 100% agrarian, okay? Tobacco, cotton, crops, and there wasn't enough labor in the South. They didn't have the people there. So they imported slaves, not justifying it. It was horrible. It was horrible. And any decent person would have recoiled from it. But the slave owners and the slave sellers and everybody else didn't. That's their sin. And if you're a believer, they were judged. There is no excuse. But the economy would not have existed if not for slavery, because there were not enough people and not enough money to pay them. So the South would never have signed on to the Revolutionary War without a continuation of slavery. Ever. All right? Everybody knew that. Now, the Adams boys, John Adams, John Quincy Adams' son, John Hancock, Samuel Adams up in Boston, they hated slavery. They hated it. And most of the founding fathers did. Benjamin Franklin didn't like slavery. The Southern guys, Madison, Jefferson, Washington, they had slaves. So that's, again, their sin. But they all came together in Philadelphia, and they forged a pact to fight the king, knowing that if they lost, they were all going to get hung. But they didn't deal with the slavery issue then in order to unite all 13 colonies against the king. But they did build into the Declaration of Independence the words, all men are created equal, not all white men. And that set a foundation to repudiate slavery in the years to come, which is exactly what happened. And most of the people that forced the slavery out of the United States were white men who fought on the side of the North in the Civil War. That's the truth. That's it. I'm not justifying anything. I'm telling you the truth and why it happened. It wasn't a bunch of guys in Philadelphia getting together going, ah, we got to have slavery. That's not what it was. They were bitterly divided. And there were more people opposed to slavery among the founding fathers than supported. But, you know, I mean, I can give this lecture all day long to Crystal Knight, and Crystal Knight's not going to believe it. She doesn't want to believe it. Not just to make her a bad person. She just doesn't want to believe it. Just like Hill doesn't want to believe the truth about criminality. Okay. So I'm going to take a break now. And I got a final thought on what we can do. What has to happen to bring whites and blacks together in America? Right back. All right, we continue now. I'm going to do a few touts, take another quick break, and then I'll give you the final thought on what has to happen in America for us to come together, which is vitally important. It really is. We are a much stronger nation when we don't have racial strife. We want you to read all the Killing books, but Killing the Mob is still number 8 on the bestseller list, if you can believe it, after 15 weeks. I mean, it's incredible. An incredible success. You buy that and Killing Crazy Horse together, 40% off. And if you're a premium or concierge member, you get more than that. We're giving you the books. I want you to check out the history tour with Donald Trump now with the Afghan thing. This becomes an even more important program. In December, we'll switch you right to the box office. You got Lauderdale, you got Orlando, Florida, you got Dallas and Houston. All right, check it out. It's going to really be history. I named it the History Tour. It's going to be history. Word of the day, do not be ostentatious when writing to me at Bill@BillO'Reilly.com. Bill@BillO'Reilly.com. Right back with the final thought.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, race relations in the United States is all about one thing and one thing only. An equal opportunity to pursue happiness. That's it. There's nothing more to it than that. Every American citizen, every one of us, should have an equal chance to pursue happiness as we see it. That means we choose our career, we choose our lifestyle, we choose how to conduct ourselves lawfully, but this is our choice in our pursuit of happiness. And that's why those words are in the Declaration of Independence. We don't want the king telling us how to pursue happiness. Now, we all have to work together. There are bigots, and I ignore the bigots unless they're in a position of influence. Then I go after them. And you know it. You watch me for 25 years now? I don't abide bigots. And there's bigotry in African-American precincts as well. You're a bigot, I'm coming for you. But if you're a low-level creep bigot, I'm ignoring you. Okay. I believe most Americans are not bigots. My parents were. We lived in a segregated place, Levittown. It was terrible. Shouldn't have been segregated, but it was in the 1950s. okay? My parents never said anything disparaging against blacks. My idol was Willie Mays growing up, and they encouraged that, my parents. So I don't know any bigots. Maybe you do. I don't, because they won't hang with me. But we have to set up a system, and it starts with education, and it starts with African Americans themselves demanding that their neighborhoods be cleaned up. Demanding it. Demanding that the drug gangs get out, cooperating with the police. I know it's hard, but you can do it anonymously. Merging with the churches. You gotta demand. You guys gotta do it. I walked the streets of a Baltimore ghetto about a year ago. I was shocked at how disheveled the whole place was. Clean up the yard. And you white people who don't think you have an obligation to help African Americans, you do. Because they've had it tougher than us. There's no doubt they have. Their ancestors, many of them were enslaved. I know mine were in Ireland. I know how it is. If I can help anybody, any American, I will. And I have African American friends and I've helped them because I understand the experience. I don't know their day-to-day experience. I can't walk in their shoes because I'm white. And I believe them when they say that some people look down upon them and some people are, you know, bigoted against them. I know what happens. But if all of us would help each other and stop with the victimization, doesn't do you any good. You don't need a government handout. You need to get educated and work hard and obey the law. That's everybody, every skin color. That's what you need to do, not ask Biden for another check. That weakens the nation. It weakens you. So that's why I did this program tonight. I want to hear from you. Bill at BillO'Reilly.com. Again, if you think I'm being unfair in any way, let me know.